we grab the sports world by the neck and swing it around like a cowboy's lasso. It's a heck of a thing, really. Scheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
I'm Craig Scheman with Pete Shepherd on Southwest Florida Sports Leader 99.3 ESPN. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Danny Picard is going to join us from Boston Metro. He's the one that broke the story that the Houston Astros were up to hijinks and had an employee looking in on the Red Sox dugout. And was he photographing, videotaping, relaying messages? He was doing all the above, I guess.
All the above. And it started with in the Indian series. It may have started as early as back in August with the A's.
All right. So we'll get to all that and more NFL news. And I want to get Jay on. He's been waiting very patiently on the phones. We were talking about John Gruden and the mess he has out in Oakland. And he was asked whether he should just tank the season. 239-337-ESPN. Jay, thank you for being patient. You're on with Scheman and Shepherd. How are you, sir?
Hey, Jay.
I'm all right. How y'all doing?
Good, man? Good.
What are you? All I want to know is what made John Gruden so special. You know, he won. Well, I can't say he won a Super Bowl. He stole a Super Bowl because the team was already in place by Tony Dungy.
Tony Dungy's team, yep. Man.
And then after that, he didn't do nothing else. He retired. Then he come back and he trade one of the best tight ends that Oakland probably ever seen. And then he goes and say, oh, I mean, not tight end, but pass rusher. My bad. And they say, pass rushers are hard to find. No kidding. You trade one of the best. You trade one of the best pass rushers. And then say, oh, pass rushers are hard to find. It's like trading Reggie White. That's one of that's a diamond in the rough that you do not trade away.
No, Jay, everything you're saying, you look at the last 5 years that he coached, they were you know, mediocre to bad at best. And everything you said is true. I think that creepy Mark Davis fell in love with, quote-unquote, the sexiness of the name of John Gruden. Thought he was going to wave some sort of magic wand from the past of 2002, and it was going to be okay. And it's been anything but. It's been a disaster. I don't think Derek Carr, I think he's upset. He doesn't want to hear anything about rebuilding. Everything you said about Khalil Mack is true. And the offense looks totally out of sync. This guy was supposed to come in and revamp that offense, except for the Browns game. It's looked horrible. So, yeah, I'm not sure the guy's going to make it to Vegas. I know it's a big contract. I don't know if he's going to make it to Vegas.
How do you give somebody that stole the Super Bowl, not even won one, stole the Super Bowl, a $100 million contract? This is not, you know, Bill Belichick or one of them top coaches that make good adjustment schemes.
He's not even Adam Gase.
He don't even scheme right. That's the problem. If you look at Oakland this year, mm-hmm. and you take away the Browns, you can't take nothing away from the Browns because they actually doing pretty good this season. You take that game away, and they are 0-6.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. That was a loss. The officials screwed that up. The NFL has admitted it. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate the call. And I also think that people get wide-eyed when people are on TV. It, like, makes them an expert. It happened with Matt Millen in Detroit. It's happened with John Gruden in Oakland. It happened with John Lynch in San Francisco. The guy had no experience whatsoever. And all of a sudden, they talk their way into a job like this.
Two things real quick. All right, so here are the point totals for the Oakland Raiders in all of their games this year. 13, mm-hmm. 19, 20, 45, 10, 3.
It's as bad as the Giants.
It's getting worse. Yeah. It's getting worse.
Well, the 3 with Oak in London last week was abysmal. And now that you find out that he had to do research on traveling, that the players were not physically prepared sleep-wise just to play in that game, you can understand. They were sluggish. Nobody wanted to be there. It was an embarrassment. Your quarterback ended up being annihilated. 6 sacks was generous because he got hit like 20 times in that game. I think it was 19, actually. Seriously.
Yeah.
He got hit like 19
Ouch.
Times in that game. 6 sacks, and they looked disinterested.
I think Davis signed Gruden because Oakland fans were upset that they were losing their Raiders again. Yep. They don't like losing their team. They've gone through this before. They got him back, and they couldn't find a solution to keep him in town. But what was going to ease everybody? Hey, we're going to put something together for the final 3 years. Don't worry, guys. We're leaving, but we're going to go out trying to win a Super Bowl. And you can't go and hire an offensive coordinator, yeah. You know, the up-and-coming offensive coordinator, and push that message. You can't hire Matt Nagy and push that message. You can do it with John Gruden. I think it was buying him time.
And I think that's the reason Marshawn Lynch is there too. Mm-hmm. Kind of a throwback.
Absolutely,
without a doubt.
Absolutely. But Marshawn Lynch and John Gruden are not going to win you football games by themselves. And it's just a mess.
And remember their first three games, they held the lead at halftime against the Rams, the Broncos, and the Dolphins. They couldn't hold on to any of those leads. Why? Because they couldn't get after the opposing quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Khalil Mack. Exactly.
Could have helped.
Speaking of Khalil Mack, Chris and Pete, you got some audio on your computer with Bill Belichick talking about Khalil Mack. And I want to get to that because I think that's interesting in itself. I mean, look, Khalil Mack has been everything as advertised for the Chicago Bears. He's been a one-man wrecking crew in the games that he has played, and now he's a little banged up with his foot, but he's still the real deal.
Defensive player of the year so far.
So far, you'd have to say. I mean, he literally can affect games. I even questioned myself, and I thought, all right, can one guy really affect that much on the defensive side of the ball? I now know the answer is yes. Khalil Mack can mess you up. And so he's been getting praised, and he's been getting compared to some of the greats in the game. Bill Belichick was asked about this recently, and I guess what he was compared to.
Well, yeah,
somebody
brought
Taylor?
Up, you know, compared to Lawrence Taylor, and Bill had this to say.
Bill, you've seen a lot of good pass rushers in your career, starting with Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White. Does Mack sort of rank up there with one of the better ones you've seen?
We're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah, I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. So you put everybody down below that. That's. With a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
There you go. Pretty elaborate. I'd agree with him.
Now, give me 2 seconds here to punch up Lawrence's Twitter account because you're going to love this.
Lawrence Taylor responded
Lawrence
on
Taylor
being
And
compared?
Lawrence Taylor doesn't respond a lot. First of all, when you click on Lawrence Taylor's Twitter account, underneath it says, you know, at LT56.
Yeah.
And underneath that says the official Instagram account. Of NFL Hall of Famer Lawrence Taylor. Instagram.
Yeah.
Under his Twitter page.
Well, okay. Does he have his Instagram handle on there?
Let me see.
Because a few people do. Like, I know,
is that a faux pas?
Well, I know Josina Anderson does that as well. In her bio, she has her Instagram.
Yeah.
No.
Is it a handle?
Yeah. What he
Whatever
does have is a CBSSports.com video. And underneath, September 21st, he tweeted it out because A Football Life Lawrence Taylor is going to repeat on Friday at 8 o'clock, which I've seen.
A thousand times.
And it's very good. He also says 17 hours ago, life is great. Follow my Instagram account at the real LT56. But he did tweet out an hour ago after Bill said that what he said and then an emoji prayer hands together.
What he said.
Before that, he hadn't tweeted out since November of last year.
Yeah, something got his attention. That's good.
And then before September of last year, and there's a picture of him standing under a tree with an umbrella, and it's raining, and he's about to hit a golf ball one-handed.
Shouldn't play in the rain with an umbrella. Get hit by lightning. It's a good way. All right. So as long as you have that, keep that open, because I know you got some Mark Dufter sound. We want to hear the direction of the Buccaneers in a moment. But first, let's go back to the phones at 239-337-ESPN. Wally on a cell phone has a comment about John Gruden. Wally, welcome to Sheeman and Shepherd. How are you?
Hey, Wally.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
You're talking about John Gruden. He's probably the most overrated coach in the history of football. Of course, his claim to fame is winning the Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team, beating mm-hmm. his own team. But that's the only thing he's ever done. But a long time ago when he was the coach of the Bucs, somebody did an analysis of how good he's supposed to be and everything, and he's supposed to be such an offensive genius. And the results of that little research project the guy did showed that every year John Gruden's offense was consistently in the bottom 25% of the NFL. So, I mean, he's supposed to be an offensive genius, and he's terrible.
I'm always fascinated how he gets credit for being this quarterback whisperer with this TV show that he had on ESPN where all the quarterbacks would have to come through him.
Gruden's QB camp.
Yeah, but he never established a quarterback.
But even during those shows, did you ever get the...
Well, here's hold what those, on.
Hey, what?
No, Rich Gannon was very good under him.
Rich Gannon was good, absolutely.
He won a
no
Super Bowl with Brad Johnson. It was a great defense he could lean on, but it was still Brad Johnson.
That's my point.
But do you remember those shows... when he was doing those quarterback camps, what was he real? All right, so you're Baker. Pick a quarterback.
Right? I would have skipped that.
Who do you want to be? I'll be John
Baker
Gruden.
Mayfield.
All right, I'll be John Gruden. Now I'm casually leaning back in my chair, like your dad.
Yeah.
Look at that play.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I'm pretty
play.
Good. Did you see me stick that flag in the ground at
Look
Ohio
at
State?
That. Look at that.
I'm pretty awesome.
I got to look at that play.
Uh-huh. I'm looking.
That is a great play to look at.
What do you got for me, Coach?
If you're looking at that play, you're looking at that play.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking at.
Look at it all
you want. Play, and I'm looking at a player who's looking at a play and completing a touchdown pass, and that's a play.
Yeah.
That's what we call a play.
That's right.
That's how you get to the next level on that play.
That was the next level.
That's what I heard. All this great, this X and O, which I don't doubt is talent, obviously. But this that show that's great enough, that segment used to bore me to tears. What did you learn?
I loved it. I loved it.
Sometimes you did, but not a lot, Chris. Not a lot.
Here's what I learned. Spider Y2 banana.
Spider Y2 banana.
That is clearing out one side of the field and having your running back run a wheel route.
Yeah.
Great.
Spider Y2 banana.
Spider Y2 banana. Now that's a play. That's a play that players
make. It's a great name. It's a fantastic name.
Nothing wrong with it.
If I'm Derek Carr, I'm calling Spider Y2 banana every single time in the huddle.
Wonderful.
There you go.
And then wonderful.
Then you're crying.
That's why Derek Carr went from a Pro Bowl quarterback 2 years ago to this.
Well, you know, there's something to be said about that. There really is. Derek Carr was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, and I know last year he struggled a bit with Jack Del Rio as well.
He got his money.
That. Yep.
And now
that team was 12-4 a couple years ago. Seemed to be on the rise.
They also had Khalil Mack on the defensive end, I might point out.
But I'm just telling you, I think 90% of that stuff that Gruden did on TV, it seemed, if you go back and look at the segments, and you can find them online and rewind it, I don't think it's all that impressive. Not that he doesn't know what he's talking about or anything like that. It's the way he relayed it on television. It seemed to me just a lot of freaking pedantic blathering gibberish.
Well, people like pedantic blathering.
Yeah,
great
know.
Word,
buddy. You guys remember how we talked about Johnny Manziel?
Oh, there's a player.
Was he all over Johnny?
Love Johnny Manziel. Some team's going to get a franchise quarterback, I'm telling you guys.
Not.
That's a player.
Somebody's going to get somebody that can drink.
He's a player because he knows how to play. When he's playing.
Little did he know it was the Montreal Alouettes who would get Johnny football.
Oui.
And has he even cracked the field more than twice there? No. Let's go to the phones. 239-337-ESPN. Tim in Naples. You're on with Sheeman at Shepherd. How are you?
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I don't think he stole the Super Bowl as far as John Gruden's concerned. I mean, he did it with somebody else's team, kind of like Switzer did with Dallas with Jimmy Johnson's team.
Yeah,
fact.
But as far as getting to the Super Bowl with the defense and all and Brad Johnson at quarterback, he still did manage to win it. But you got to remember, he used to coach the Raiders. He had their signals.
Mm-hmm.
He knew a lot of their plays, and his defense was in the right spots at the right time.
No question.
Some of the interceptions, it looked like they knew exactly where the ball was going.
Yeah, but Tim, as far as signals goes, it's that signal stuff. I mean, there's no way the Raiders use the same signals. They're switching that around, and if they use the same signals, there's no way they use the same signals.
I don't know. Brian Callahan never made it back as head coach.
That stuff gets so overblown.
Sure says they knew a lot.
Yeah. They did. No, he definitely knew their tendencies, and I also knew Rich Gannon's tendencies and what he would do.
That's exactly. To Craig's point, that's what it was, because Derek Brooks...
He's not a coach for today's NFL. That old school stuff where he wants to have smash-mouth football, and that's not going to work, and he's not smart enough to keep the best defensive player in the league on his team.
Yeah.
Nah, he ain't going to go nowhere.
He doesn't know how to get to London either,
Thank
Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
Doesn't know how to get there.
Well, if you look at a globe, like California to London, you could go either way. You could
research.
Go over Asia.
Research.
You could go over North America. It was really the flip of a coin.
I still think, still think the North America route's a faster one.
I think
it's a lot faster. Take Qantas to Australia and get there, too.
Sean in Port Charlotte, you're on with Sheeman and Shepherd. Go ahead.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, guys. Not going to totally defend Gruden here, but I always think it's funny we hear this year after year, he got there with Dungy's team. Yeah, the team that Dungy couldn't get over the hump and win a Super Bowl with. And also, let's not forget, Trent Dilfer leaves Tampa or whatever and goes to another similar scenario, a team with a great defense, and they managed to win a team with his mediocre abilities. So, you know, after he left Tampa, too. So it's like, I just got to say, you know, he deserves a little credit there.
Come on, I agree with Sean, but don't forget this. Don't forget, do you remember in 2000 who Tony Dungy's team lost to in the NFC Championship? It was to the Rams at their place, and it was 15-9, 13-9. It was one of the greatest defensive coaching schemes I've ever seen against one of the most highly prolific offenses we've ever seen. And I think had he played that game at home, they would have won. And I think he would have beaten any other team on the road that day in the NFC except for them. Let's not forget that. He was up against juggernaut and did an unbelievable job, and they nearly pulled off one of the biggest upsets in NFC Championship history.
Yeah.
But,
good point.
Yep. Okay.
All right,
but
Sean,
I hear what you're saying.
Thank
I hear
you for the call. 239-337-ESPN. Well, we haven't heard from Bo and Benita in like months. Bo, how you been?
Bo.
Good. What's up?
Bo?
Hey, I just don't call, man.
How are you?
I just want to tell y'all, get off Gruden's back, man. I'm not a big fan of Gruden. I'm not going to support him or defend him too much here, but he's in the first year of a contract coming back from 10 years. Get a man a little time to see what he can do. That's all I'm saying. Gotta go.
All right, Bo.
Bo likes to drop the mic.
No.
I'm a little more leaning toward that than you are, Pete. I mean, it is like halfway through year one.
Remember, he also had his Raiders damn near, was it an AFC championship or almost in the Super Bowl when that stupid tuck rule came into play.
The same rule that went against the Patriots early on the season.
Yeah, but nobody remembers that because it wasn't
in the
playoffs.
Super Bowl on the
you don't remember it because you guys have
a nobody remembers that part. But I can't even confirm that actually happened.
Yeah.
It was probably before Chris was born.
It was a divisional playoff game, yes. And still.
That wasn't the AFC championship, right?
No, it was a divisional playoff game.
Okay, that's what I thought. But
yeah, and they had three other third down opportunities to close that game out in that game, despite the tuck rule and all, and Vinatieri's kick. They had a chance, and they could not get a first down several times on third and one. They had to punt the ball away, and they lost. Fact. People forget about that, too. A lot of hysterical amnesia when it comes to that game. A lot of tuck rule-itis. But they forget the opportunities the Raiders had, besides all that, to still close out the game and could not do it.
It's like pulling a string on a doll. I know. Insert answer here. I know what's coming out. Steve in the Cape.
Just stop listening.
You're always Sheeman and Shepherd. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, you know, I will never forget this, but the reason Gruden won that Super Bowl has nothing to do with the Super Bowl. It was 100% Andy Reid's fault. You got to remember, everything was set up for the Eagles. It was in Philadelphia. It was freezing.
Yep.
Tampa was the underdog.
Yeah.
Everything pointed to the Eagles winning that game except one thing. Andy Reid. He had lost. He had let Trotter go, and he had replaced him with that idiot from Pittsburgh, Kirkland.
Oh, that's right.
And Kirkland couldn't cover a bed with a blanket. They tried to put him on Jarvicious, and Jarvicious would still be scoring if it wasn't for Andy. If it wasn't for Andy Reid letting Trotter go, Eagles win that game, and the Eagles win the Super Bowl.
Steve, how many NFC Championship games can you say that about?
Five.
Oh my God, Andy Reid easily cost the Eagles like five Super Bowls.
Yeah, he did.
He's the worst kind of management coach in history.
Fact.
And he's going to blow it for Kansas City this year. Too.
Fact.
Only a matter of time.
If we were rewarding points for answers, we'd be bleep, bleep, bleep.
Oh, it was funny.
But you know, to be fair, that was an unbelievable Tampa Bay defensive team. And they were, and that's when they had a good team. I mean, like I said, that they the year before they would have beaten anybody, and I think including the Eagles, even in the cold weather. Where Tampa had an abysmal record. Remember?
Yeah.
They 0-33 at one point, 0-35.
Yes.
When the temperature was under 40
degrees.
Under
40, yeah.
But that was a special team. I for them to hold their own, I know it was inside against the Rams the year before, was pretty impressive.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, coming up in a little bit, we're going to give away another $50 Amazon gift card.
Trotter,
we are going to register somebody to be in our grand prize drawing for a chance to go to Bristol, Connecticut, hotel and airline included, to go see Golic and Wingo and hang out with their show, and then tour the Palatial Studios to ESPN and the Mothership. So all that coming up on the program. Next, We'll continue to take your phone calls, but we're going to talk to Danny Picard from the Boston Metro. He was the one that broke the story about the shenanigans going on with the Astros and their management team and spying in on the Red Sox in game one of their series, yep, and also doing it against Cleveland in their series. Mm-hmm. So this is the guy that broke the story, and he's firsthand knowledge. So we'll have him on next. Should be an interesting conversation. Stay with us, and we'll give you more details if you're not sure what we're talking about or if you haven't caught this story. But it's an interesting sidebar to what's going on in the playoffs right now in Major League Baseball.
And this guy will be right up your alley because Danny is everything Southie.
Southie?
South Boston.
South Boston. Oh, come on. Come on.
Southie. I think south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Have you never seen the town? They're Southies.
Yeah.
Come on.
All the stereotypes.
Ben Affleck with his terrible accent?
Yeah. This is the real deal. He's genuine. He's awesome. He's a real good guy. A damn good hockey player too.
Maybe I'll just sit by the side and let you two chowder accents go at it.
No, I don't. No, his accent's much much thicker than mine. But it's genuine. It's unique, and he knows his stuff.
All right, looking forward to that. That's coming up next with Sheeman and Shepherd on Southwest Florida Sports Leader 99.3 ESPN.
Sports. You love it. Love it. We love it. Love it. And quite frankly, I don't trust anyone who doesn't love it. Do you?
Is that a serious question?
This is Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
Craig Sheeman, Pete Shepherd, Southwest Florida Sports Leader, 99.3 ESPN. The league championship series are in full swing. Boston with a big win in Houston last night to take a 2-1 series lead there. The National League Championship Series all knotted at 2 after a 13-inning affair last night. But a little side story. It's turning into a big side story. What's going on with the Astros and the fact that they had an employee hovering nearby the Red Sox dugout and gleaning information, apparently taking pictures, signaling stuff. We can get all the details here. Danny Picard is the one that broke this story for Boston Metro. And he's a friend of Pete's, and he's with us right now. I want to welcome him. Danny, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Danny.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. All right, so for people that may only be hearing bits and pieces of this, give us the real scoop here. So as far as what happened in Game 1, and then we can backtrack and say what happened in the Cleveland series and maybe earlier this year against the A's. What happened in Game 1? Was there an Astros management personnel person hanging out near the dugout or the Red Sox, or who was this person, and what were they doing?
The man claimed to be an Astros employee, and then after he was removed from a media-credentialed area next to the Red Sox dugout in the third inning, another Astros staffer actually claimed him as theirs, and in fact, they put up a stink. They wanted him to stay in that spot. And Red Sox security obviously said, no, that's not going to happen for a couple reasons. One, the only reason they really caught the guy was because they were tipped off heading into Game 1. Now, this happened Saturday night at Fenway, Game 1 of the ALCS. Mm-hmm. So Red Sox security was tipped off. And they saw this kid. They were watching him for a couple innings. He had a small camera, which was a much different camera than any of the other cameras that he was around. The other cameras he was around were, you know, those big professional long cameras, and he just had this little camera that he was taking pictures, or I don't know, it could have been video, of the Red Sox dugout. He was right next to it. Mm-hmm. And he was also texting frequently, and that's when they pounced on him. And so that was one reason they wouldn't let him back into the area. The other reason was he didn't have the proper credential for it. Hmm. So you needed to have a credential to be in that area. He didn't have it. And, you know, when you put it all together, you have to go back to the ALDS and figure out, you know, who tipped off the Red Sox. And as we're finding out through some other reports, it was the Cleveland Indians. I mean, I was told that it was the Indians. And that kind of pushed me towards, you know, going after this story. I never actually was able to get a good enough source on specifically nailing down that the Indians tipped the Red Sox security off, but I knew Red Sox security was tipped off because of stuff that happened, suspicious activity with this individual in the ALDS. So you put two and two together, you're like, well, Houston's not going to be tipping off their own guy
right,
for suspicious activity. And then when I reached out to the Cleveland Indians, I gave them all the details. I said, here's what I got. And I thought it was an easy denial. And they didn't deny. They just said, we're not going to comment on the situation. And I thought that was basically, you know, for me, that was good enough for me to run with it and run with the pot that, you know, the Red Sox security, then they weren't lying. My sources weren't lying to me. They were tipped off about something in the ALDS. So this kid was up to no good. Red Sox security knew it, and they caught him before he could do whatever he was trying to do.
You think Terry Francona might have had something to do with this? He found out and said, because he still has a lot of friends, obviously, in, you know, with the Red Sox, and think maybe he might have tweeted, texted somebody, called somebody, said, hey, watch out for this D-bag who's hanging around the dugout.
I don't know for sure that it was Terry Francona. It very well could have been. I mean, we know, obviously, his history with the Red Sox. However, I would argue that it didn't really end well for him here, so I don't know what that relationship is like right now with Francona and the Red Sox. But I don't know. Maybe there's a relationship there with Alex Cora. You know, I think when you look at the Indians, you have to see the Trevor Bauer tweeted last night about this and basically confirmed that part of the story. So, you know, I'm getting some stuff on the Indians, but there's some things that I couldn't confirm, and I wanted to make sure when I got this out, I got it right. So all I reported was that Red Sox security was tipped off from this man, you know, doing suspicious stuff in the ALDS. But as we know now, you know, it was Cleveland. So I don't know if it was Francona, though. I really could not tell you that. I do know that. If it was Francona, there was more than one person than in that organization that knew this was going on.
Now, Danny, now you said I heard you earlier because you've been on like every TV and radio station, a lot of them around the country. But you said you were at the game as a fan, which I'm not surprised about because who wants to sit with those D-bags in the press box anyway, except for the free food. So when you were at Fenway on during Game One, somebody texted you. I mean, how'd you find out about it initially?
You know, it's funny, and Pete, you get this too, you know, when you're in Boston, like, people always send you stuff, like, oh, this happened, that happened, I saw this guy here, what's the common one? We hear the guy that's going to work out for the Patriots, somebody sees him at Logan, right?
Yeah.
That's like
the
common text that you get, like, oh, this guy's at so-and-so's at Logan Airport. It's like, okay, is he though? You know what I mean? Like, you get so much of that stuff that a lot of it you just kind of laugh about. You say, oh, this is so-and-so saying this, even if it's somebody who's well-connected. I received a text almost immediately after this happened, and my reaction was, oh, the Astros are spying on the Red Sox. You know, not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, for a couple of reasons. I was having a good time at the game.
Yeah,
and I wasn't
of course
really
you were.
Concerned about, I wasn't really concerned about breaking news. I wanted to see. I was more concerned about Chris Sale's velocity being 89, 90 miles per hour.
Yeah.
That was stressing me out. But, so I'm like, oh, the Astros got caught spying, whatever. You know, and also my mindset on this stuff in professional sports is that it's a competitive edge. And if one person's doing it, if one team's doing it, I just assume everybody's doing it.
Right.
You know, I that's my mindset. Like, I kind of, I don't take this stuff too seriously because I just feel like a lot of people are trying to get a competitive edge. Now, I woke up Sunday, you know, talked to some other people, And I found out about that Red Sox security was tipped off. And to me, that was like, that was an alarming thing because that meant this was bigger than whatever happened in that moment Saturday night. This was then, there's a person who works for the Astros that was also doing this in a previous series against another team.
Yeah.
And so that's when, in my mind, it became a story to attack. And I just kept digging. And it was like every corner that I turned, there was a new piece of information that you know, I would then go somewhere else to try to confirm. And eventually, you know, I was in touch from people in all at all parties, Red Sox, Astros, even the Indians, and also Major League Baseball. And you know, the final party to talk to me about it was Major League Baseball. And when they acknowledged that this thing was going on and they were going to deal with it internally, that's when I said, well, you're on the record with this. I have to run this story. That basically tells me this actually went down. So, Saturday night, I didn't think too much of it. But a couple days later, you know, Tuesday, I get the message from Major League Baseball during the game. And, you know, you talk to your editor and you say, well, we can't not run this story now. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, this
right.
is a big deal if this kid is linked also to the ALDS. And this is a bigger issue than just one game between the Red Sox and the Astros.
Danny Picard is with us from Boston Metro. He broke this story about the Astros spygate on the Red Sox. That's what we'll call it for now, I guess. Now, you said Major League Baseball is looking into it internally. What possibly could happen? Is this just going to be a fine? So could somebody be fired? I remember somebody with the Cardinals was fired when they were getting into the Astros email system like 5-6 years ago. So I'm just wondering what the next step is, since this seems to be confirmed that it happened.
Well, I would say the first step that we're going to see here is that this kid is never going to be allowed into a ballpark, I don't think. the same ballpark that the Astros are in. I don't think you're going to see that. But if there's any fine or even maybe suspension within somebody in the Astros organization, whether it's the front office or even ownership, who knows? I don't think you'll see that till next year. I think right now they're going to let this thing play out. I think they're going to call this an investigation internally, and I don't think we'll get any results from any investigation, publicly at least, until after the postseason is over. You know how much Major League Baseball hates when other news within their league breaks during their postseason. So, what's funny about it, too, though, as I say that, and I was asked this morning on a couple shows, did I feel like talking to people, people were happy that this got out, and I kind of think they are. Like, and you see that now with other reports. Like, all of a sudden, all these Major League Baseball insiders have all this information on the guy and the situation, and it's like, well, wait a minute. If you had all this information, why didn't you report it before I did? And that's because I don't think anybody was really willing to dig maybe the way I dug on this, but also, there were some things that I think some people could have easily denied if they wanted this to go away. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people that I talked to that would not deny this. And I got the sense that them not denying all this information, I laid out all the information to everybody I talked to because I needed to make sure I got this right. And nobody wanted to deny it. And that told me, and I got a sense from a couple other people that this is something maybe people wanted out there because they knew it was happening, and they know it needs to stop. And now it looks like it probably, at least from the Astros' side, it's going to stop. It's going to stop, if not this postseason, next season.
Well, I think this just came out. As you've been speaking with us, let me just read you this from Major League Baseball. I want to get your reaction as well, and Craig's. Yep. So Major League Baseball issued the following statement today. This is just coming down now that I'm seeing, like 2 minutes ago, as you were talking. It said, before the postseason began, a number of clubs called the commissioner's office about sign stealing and the inappropriate use of video equipment. The concerns expressed related to a number of clubs, not any one specific club. In response to these calls, the commissioner's office reinforced the existing rules with the all-playoff clubs and undertook proactive measures, including instituting a new prohibition on the use of certain in-stadium cameras, increasing the presence of operations and security personnel from Major League Baseball at all postseason games, and instituting a program of monitoring club video rooms. Last part. With respect to both incidents regarding a Houston Astros employee, security identified an issue, addressed it, and turned the matter over to the Department of Investigations. A thorough investigation concluded that an Astros employee was monitoring the field to ensure that the opposing club was not violating any rules. All clubs remaining in the playoffs have been notified to refrain from these types of efforts and to direct complaints about any in-stadium rule violations to MLB staff for investigation and resolution. We consider the matter closed.
Closed.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think right now they're just trying to bury this for the time being. I actually don't think it's going to be closed because I do know that this was a specific target on a specific person. And they can say all they want about other teams doing things and other teams complaining about each other and the use of video equipment. But, I can't speak for other situations because I haven't heard about those. But this was a specific target that they were warned about. And so, I think that's a statement that Major League Baseball feels they probably have to make because now this is a huge story, right?
Yeah.
How many times do we talk about Spygate in different sports and the punishments that go along with it and the call for immediate action? So this is a huge story. They don't want to be talking about this right now, and I think they're going to say whatever they have to make sure that they put this to bed right now. I don't think this is over, though, because I think that if you're Major League Baseball, you need to know how long the Astros have been doing this for. It's not like this is a last-place team in the middle of July with a video guy next to somebody's dugout. This is the defending world champion Houston Astros, a team that is unstoppable and has been unstoppable now. And I think, again, this is a specific situation that I was told about. And so I don't expect this to be over regardless of what they say.
All right, I definitely have some thoughts on it. We'll get to that. Danny, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks
really
so much, pal.
Say
hi to everybody.
All right, will do. Thanks, guys.
All right. Danny Picard from Boston Metro who broke this story. Pete and I definitely have some thoughts on this. We'll share them with you when we come back, plus some more details on the up-and-coming XFL for later on. We've got a $50 gift card from Amazon to give away and your chance to be part of the Golic and Wingo show and hang out with them for a day and watch things behind the scenes, all that coming up.
Yeah.
But the Obscure Sports Minute is next. Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN.
Craig and Pete have you covered on the main sports. Chris will get you covered on everything else. It's the Obscure Sports Minute.
Nice night in hockey last night. The Devils blanked the Stars 3-0. Final in Madison Square Garden. The Rangers beat the Avalanche in a shootout. The Flyers beat the Panthers in a shootout. And the Penguins lost to the Canucks in overtime 3-2 on home ice. Tonight, we got four more games. Blues at Canadiens. Rangers going to D.C. to take on the Caps. Bruins north of the border facing the Flames. That's on NBCSN. It's 9:30. And the Islanders out in California to take on the Ducks. Quack, quack, quack. Last night, I was late to the baseball action and the NBA because I was watching the U.S. play Peru in an international friendly.
How'd that go?
Wow. It was 1-1.
Shocker.
Terrible. Not great. Terrible. A lot better in the second half by the U.S. side than the first half. I believe Peru had a 70-30% possession advantage at halftime. But Josh Sargent scored in the 49th minute. We gave up a goal in the 86th minute to tie it 1-1. But team is starting to come together, I think. I'm liking some of the pieces that we're seeing. The back two looked pretty good last night. Once we were able to work Christian Pulisic in, you've got this Josh Sargent who looks pretty good. Timothy Weah, who's another nice attacking player. It's starting to come together for the U.S., I think.
When do we qualify for World Cup? Because that's when I zoom back in.
Two summers.
Okay. So I can shut my brain off for a couple summers? Okay.
Two summers from now is when the meat of the qualification. And remember, the next World Cup goes up to 48 teams instead of the 32.
Oh, so a shoo-in to make it.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it would be easier to get in, yes.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, and by the way, coming up in a moment, the Sheeman and Shepard cash grab and your chance to win $1,000. We had Danny Picard on from the Boston Metro. He's the one that broke the story about the Astros stealing signs right there next to the dugout for the Red Sox. And look, I want my team trying to steal signs, but I want them to do it the conventional way. That means managers or players stealing signs the old-fashioned
way.
This
is more than stealing signs,
right,
though.
You're right.
Yeah, this is more than stealing signs.
I'm okay with it if a guy's on second base looking in. Look, if you're better than the other team and you don't hide them, fine, cool. If you're putting, like, management player or people representing the organization camped right outside the dugout and posing as photographers for the media that goes beyond the pale. I'm not too cool with that. That's a little shaky. But then my first question is, does everybody do it? It goes back to that. We had that at Spygate back in the day. Does everybody do it?
That's a little different. Of course, everybody tapes the other team in football. This is a little different when a guy and again, MLB really wussed out here. And Danny's right. This isn't going to go away. They're putting the kibosh on it now. But they're basically saying they issued a statement right when we were talking to Danny. And basically saying that everybody else is doing it. Everybody else is all of Major League Baseball. The Astros are innocent. They didn't do anything, which is no way. and it said all clubs remaining in the playoffs have been notified to refrain from these types of efforts and to direct complaints about any in-stadium rules violations to MLB staff for investigation and resolution. We consider the matter closed. I promise you the matter is not closed.
The matter is closed
until the World Series
season.
Is over.
Right.
Yeah.
Baseball is notorious for not wanting any other bad news.
No. Or good news for that matter. They don't want managerial change. They want nothing.
Not till the World Series is over. And then, being in the offseason when people are looking away, that's when they'll deal with it. That's what they want to do here. All right. So, interesting conversation to be had there. And regarding that particular series, it gets resumes tonight, of course, the Red Sox and Astros, 8:39 Eastern time on TBS.
Porcello versus Morton.
Charlie Morton. Expect a lot of curveballs there.
Morton hasn't pitched in a while.
Yeah. And also preceding that would be game five of the Dodgers and the Brewers. That's all tied at two. That's Wade Miley versus Clayton Kershaw. We'll see if he pitches well in a big game or not.
And I want to get afterwards, and when we get back into the NFL part of it, a really disturbing story in the NFL. Like, they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars. Why? Because the Chargers are reportedly revising their revenue projections from $400 million down to $150 million. Craig Sheeman has been on top of this. You have said, you have made the prediction from day one. They will end up and back in San Diego.
Fact.
I thought it was poppycock when you said it. Now I'm reversing. I think there's a good chance. You can't lose $250 million in revenue, and they can't sell PSL seats at the new stadium.
Nope.
This team is screwed.
It's more than half.
Yeah?
Yeah. We'll talk about that some more when we come back. And then competition from the XFL. I have some details about the new league as well.
I don't like it. It's going to fail.
I don't think so.
The XFL?
Yeah.
It's already failed once.
Wow.
It's like the Chargers in San Diego. We've seen it. It doesn't work.
It's the new XFL. Come on, Chris. Get with it. All that coming up. The word? Going to be ace. A-C-E. Ace. The Sheeman and Shepherd cash grab.
As in Ventura.
Yes. Or
ace of hearts.
Clayton Kershaw thinks he's an ace, except in the postseason. All that coming up. Sheeman and Shepherd.
Sheeman,
Southwest.
Ace is with me.
Nice. Coming off another poker. Sheeman and Shepherd. We're trying to close out this segment.
I got nothing else for you either.
99.3 ESPN.